Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. We ask that you kindly not be that guy, and instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone from their top brands in any condition on any unlimited plan for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 with Galaxy AI.
With new line on my plan, additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows. Only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
Hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. So today I actually have Tamika here with me. We're here to talk about Rush Hour. This is part of our Black History Month, and I'm excited to be able to have
her here. No, it is now.
Anyways, it's part of our Black History Month. I hope you guys end up enjoying this review. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about Rush Hour scene by scene, and let's do it. Hey, Tamika.
You ain't right.
I've been told that before. That's not my first time.
You're right in the head.
I've been told that a million times in my 40 years of my life that I've been on this earth.
Oh, my goodness.
So, how you been doing?
I don't know.
You don't know now. You were good up until you came on the show.
Yeah.
That's all.
We're going to kick out Black History Month with Russia.
Hey, you have a best of both worlds, right?
Oh, my Lord.
So my thing is this. I was just wondering, like, when you look at Rush Hour, where were you in 1998 when you first heard about this?
Actually, I was in the movie theaters watching it. I think me and my friend at the time snuck in and saw it, but then she was bouncing around. She was like, oh, let's go somewhere else. I was like, well, this movie getting good. And then I was chasing out the hood like an idiot. Should have just sat there and watched it. But yeah, that's where I first heard about Rush Hour. You know, like the trailers, and then we snuck in and saw the movie because we were movie hopping.
I gotcha. Yeah, to be honest with you, I was actually in high school whenever this movie happened. And I love this movie. I remember seeing the trailers for it. I remember cracking up when Chris Tucker goes, "You never touch a black man's radio."
Yeah.
I remember the one-liners. I remember going to see this with my mom in the movie theater for the very first time.
Wow.
Yeah, I got to see this with my mom. I was in maybe junior high, maybe 7th, 8th grade at that time in 98.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like one of those movies that everybody was talking about. When you went to school, you knew that people were going to be talking about Rush Hour.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, all we heard was quotes from them, from different one-liners and stuff like that from my friends. We would always talk about it, and we would always sing War on top of our lungs. So, yeah, this movie has great nostalgia when I look at it from that standpoint, where we can still quote this movie. It still holds up, at least from a nostalgia standpoint. But where do you rate this at as far as nostalgia goes?
8.
Okay. Yeah. This one. And what? 8.7?
Yeah.
Okay. I have to go, to be honest with you, I did Heat last week. I rated that about a 9.9 or 9.8.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I came out with like a 10 out of 10 coming out of that one. Mm-hmm. So with this, I'm going to have to go at least an 8 with this one, too, because of the fact with the nostalgia, with me quoting this movie and just having a good time stuffing my face with popcorn for a whole entire hour and 40 minutes, I really enjoy this for what it is. So, yeah, I'm going to have to give this at least an 8 out of 10 for this one.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're going to go, now that we've talked about this, now that we've talked about it from a nostalgia standpoint, now we're going to be erasing everything from our minds. Yes. And we're going to do this stripping away the nostalgia.
Yes.
By talking about this scene by scene.
Mm-hmm.
So do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
That's supposed to be my line, ain't it?
See, I'm testing you. Okay, go on ahead.
That's why I rolled my eyes. I was like, oh, here it comes.
Go on ahead.
Okay. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
That's man, no one understands the words that are coming out of your mouth. Man. But, all right. Welcome to Movie Lovers Night, when we're diving into this buddy cop classic that made Jackie Chan flip, Chris Tucker talk a mile a minute, and all of us wish we had that kind of chemistry with our coworkers. We're breaking down the jokes, the action, the sheer power of a man yelling, Carter! Every 5 minutes.
So buckle up, because we're about to hit the gas faster than Jackie running up a wall. Let's get into our Rush Hour review.
Which one of y'all kicked me?
All right, let's do it, guys. So, scene one. On the last day of the British rulership.
I don't know why I let you do this to me.
Hey, this is why I have you as a guest. There's no one else that I'd rather have to do this Rush Hour review than you, to be honest with you.
That was Black History Month.
Hey, it helped. I'm just trying to bring some laughs to the Black History Month. That's all.
My ancestors like, what's Rush Hour?
But yeah.
Okay.
Scene one. On the last day of British rulership in Hong Kong in late 1998, Detective Inspector Yan Li of the Hong Kong Police Force leads a raid at a shipping wharf, hoping to arrest the mysterious crime lord known as Zhang Tao. He finds only Sang Zhang Tao's right-hand man, who manages to escape. However, Li has successfully recovered numerous Chinese cultural treasures stolen by Zhang Tao, which he presents a farewell victory to his departing superiors at a dinner party. Chinese consul Solon Han and British commander Thomas Griffin. Li excuses himself from the party after Han announces his accomplishment and is confronted by the daughter of Han, Soyoung. She confides that she is anxious towards her new life in America, given her father is to take up his new diplomatic post in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. She was to follow. But Li gives her a pendant and assures her that American people are very nice. So, what do you think about the opening for this? To me, I feel like this actually sets the tone for who we are getting for Li at the very first start of it, with his backstory, trying to take down Zhang Tao, and has that really atmospheric Chinese kind of action kind of flavor that we know from Jackie Chan, which is something I really do like whenever I look at a Jackie Chan movie. So it feels more like a Jackie Chan movie at this point than a Chris Tucker movie. But that's something that I really do appreciate, was the fact that they're giving us a look of the whole entire, the artifacts of the Chinese artifacts and stuff like that within the movie. And then, you know, you have him doing his stunt work and stuff like that within the opening scene. But I really loved it. I really loved the whole entire suspense of it. I liked the look of it. I really liked how he did his own stunts for this as well. So what do you think?
Well, when I snuck in and saw it, there were a lot of Asian audience members there and Black. It's like a mix of both was actually in the audience. So I think Jackie Chan drew that in with his fan base. I'm not sure if this was like one of his second breakout, because I know he had a movie called, is it Cop Story?
Rumble in the Bronx. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that was the first one that introduced him to American audiences, if I'm not mistaken. And maybe this is like the major breakout, you know? But yeah, you asked me about that. Yeah, I liked it. Just watching him do his stunts, I was, especially that shipping crate that was closing in and then he happened to like flip up. I didn't think he was going to make it. don't know. I'm always just fascinated with Jackie Chan and all his stunts. Cause when you look at the outtakes, you're like, ooh, that hurts, you know? So it's a miracle that man's alive, to be honest.
It like really is. I think he broke Jackie over 130 pounds
here, and Tom Cruise is like there doing their own stunts. Like he's not close to Jackie Chan. Like, you know, mid.
I don't know. I think he's getting up there though on that Rushmore of Jackie Chan though.
Yeah, but then you got like is it Jet Li?
Yeah, you have Jet Li.
Yeah, and then everybody else. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty good opening, just introducing us, reintroducing the American audiences to Jackie Chan on the big screen. It was pretty even down the middle. Like you had Jackie Chan, his introduction, and then you had Chris Tucker's introduction. So it was like night and day, yin and yang.
It definitely is. If you look at it from that perspective, because of the fact that you're not sure where Chris Tucker actually fits in with the story, especially about how it fits in with Hong Kong and then goes from Hong Kong over into going into LA, Los Angeles.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so it's definitely a change of tone, definitely change of scenery and stuff like that, which is really where I feel like it's atmospheric in a sense for a comedy for this time. And I like how he's trying to tell So Young, don't worry, it's going to be okay. American people are very nice. He's trying to paint her this nice picket fence with American people and how nice they are.
Don't they all?
But he also is like a fish out of water himself because he doesn't know exactly what to expect as well. So that's also another thing. But sure. I also want to mention this. You mentioned about Rumble in the Bronx in this one. And believe it or not, this was actually his most successful movie over that movie that we just mentioned with Rumble in the Bronx and Super Cop and all those movies.
Yeah.
This was the most successful out of them all.
I didn't know that.
Look at it. But, you know, this is hands down probably one of my favorite movies to watch, and I can always find something new to laugh at.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, this also had a budget of $33 million and it made $244,386,864 million.
Wow.
At the worldwide box office. So yeah, it made bank on a $30 million budget.
Wow.
So now we're getting into James Carter, a fast-talking and arrogant man, is introduced in Los Angeles, rushing to a deal with bomb maker Cliff Cobb and chastise him for being late, to which he defends claiming a miscommunication and they should be dealing at somewhere quieter. Cliff reveals he has C4 and Carter proven right with two arrived police officers alerted to investigate them. Before Cliff holds Carter hostage and threatens the cops to leave, Carter knocks Cliff out and tells the officers the same before Cliff regains consciousness and shoots at the two officers. Cliff attempts to escape in his car, but is shot at by Carter, who is detonates the C4 with the gunshot, and Cliff bailing seconds before the car explodes. Carter reveals he is an undercover officer for the Los Angeles Police Department, LAPD, and arrests Cliff. So, what I like about this is Chris Tucker, right? He's over there, he's late, and I like goes, man, I'm not late, you late. What are you talking about? I'm not late. And he's over there, and he goes, you got the stuff? Yeah, I got the stuff. Let me see. And he goes, what the hell am I looking at? This is C4. This is C4? You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, I'm gonna try that when I'm late. I ain't late, I've been here. I told you to meet me in the back, and here you come in the front. Okay, fine. We both late.
This is what I love about Chris Tucker is how quick he is, his wittiness that he has with him, and the back and forth between Cliff and him is really awesome, too, because, you know, you don't know what to expect with it, and he opens up the back of the trunk, and it's actually fucking C4. And he goes, oh, this is C4. This is nice. Okay. Well, just wrap it up and everything will be good to go.
He couldn't suspect that this guy may have been a cop.
No.
Oh.
I don't think he can suspect it, but it's kind of unusual that he doesn't suspect it at the same time. Because you would actually think, why would someone want C4? And why would they want something extravagant like this?
Yes. And they don't even know what C4 is. What's this?
So you ordered something, you don't even know what it is, and you have him working undercover to do this job. And I would think that you would want somebody else besides Carter to do this job.
Yes, but, you know, he does get the job done. I do have Team Carter by my name, so I have to step in and defend him. Just get the job done in the end, even though he blew up the car and could have been a better way he did that. Maybe he could have shot the tires or something, but it's fine.
Well, he did shoot the tire. He did get one of the tires, and yeah, then he wound up shooting in the back.
Yeah, it would have stopped eventually, right?
It would have messed up the rims and everything eventually, and it would have actually probably stopped. But yeah, but Carter didn't even see the guy jump out of the car either.
Yeah, he kept going like he was playing a video game. Pow, 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 pow. Hit the target.
Even Cliff said, he goes, man, I got C4 in this car. What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah. He like, pow, 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 pow.
It blows up. And then Cliff is on the ground. And this is where, you know, you have Chris Tucker, Carter, who winds up saying, I'm LAPD, bitch.
Yeah.
And he winds up arresting him. But also, too, the cops also lost a pinky, got shot at Wycliffe.
Oh, that's
by Cliff. Yeah, I definitely loved how they laid that out, you know, where, you know, you had two cops that are just there and everything, and they send something suspect, and it happens to be Carter, and Carter can't tell them that they're, you know, he's working undercover or anything, so therefore, you know, that's what winds up happening to the two cops. They wind up getting hurt because of it. Mm-hmm. Then you have this the scene with shortly after Han and Soo-young arrive in the United States. On Soo-young's first day of school, Han receives a call from China, but is cut off just after he announces his name. Having confirmed Han's presence in Los Angeles, Sang, who had escaped from Lee in Hong Kong, kidnaps Soo-young while she is chaperoned by two bodyguards to school while singing on top of her lungs. Sang disguises himself as a cop and stops the vehicle they are on before promptly shooting the two bodyguards. As he approaches to capture Soo-young, she manages to resist and scars his eye with her pendant, but drops it in the vehicle. Running away, she grabbed the motorcyclist and handed it to an arriving van. So, this is the one thing that I'm kind of confused with, in a sense. A little bit, because of it being during the day, and you're kidnapping someone during the day, and when Junta winds up saying, it's rush hour. I'm like, I thought rush hour was only in the evening time.
Oh, I didn't even...
Like, it just dawned on me now, watching it as an adult. I'm like, I thought rush hour was just basically during the evening time, not during the morning time, unless they're calling it like the morning rush or something.
I don't know. I'm from Atlanta, so rush hour is like every day.
I live in the country, so I don't really have.
1 a.m. Right, so rush hour to me is like morning, afternoon.
Right. But I like how, you know, I love the father and daughter dynamic between Soo-young's father.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, am I going to be picked up by the two bodyguards or what? He goes, no, I'm going to pick you up myself. And then she's singing on top of her lungs and within the car and about to drive the two bodyguards insane.
That is where we snuck in at.
Yep.
In the theater. We snuck in like right up to that point. And then we were like, oh my God. And then when she got kidnapped, then she was like, okay, let's go. I was like, why was the rest of the movie?
It's like, where's the suspense at? It's like, I didn't wonder what's happened to this girl.
Sorry, I had a flashback. I was like, oh my God, I shouldn't have left. But yeah, yes, that was an interesting scene. I think it was one of the iconic scenes for the fans of this franchise. Just hearing her sing Mariah Carey. So I was thinking, since we know who Jun Tao is now, right?
Right.
From watching the film, and I've seen it multiple times since. I was thinking, could I challenge myself now to look at that guy's face and go something like some kind of tail or something that lets me know that this guy is in on it. And when I look in his eyes, they look suspect to me now in the beginning.
I can see that though. I can see him like, okay, this guy, the guy that was on the boat when, Lee was with supposedly with this other guy, right? Because he was on there too with him. So you would think that the other guy in the suit was Jun Tao, but Jun Tao was standing next to him. So basically he was just a decoy. Then you get to look at and see how he looks whenever he's a total suspect, when he's dressed up inside the LAPD, police gear and stuff too. And his eyes are just very different.
That's not him. It's like the white dude.
No, there's actually he was dressed as a police officer. Because rolls. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah, I don't know who that guy is. That's some dude. He's like a henchman.
But right. Okay, you're talking about the dude on the boat that I mentioned.
Yeah, I'm talking about spoiler alert. I'm talking about the white guy.
And you just know, like that, it is
the real Jun Tao, which is cultural appropriation anyway, on Black History Month. Since we do this for Black History Month. No, I was saying like, cause in that first scene, I forgot the dad's name, but the white guy was speaking and he was like, we've been friends for 15 years. And then I paused the movie and I was like, 15 years he been deceiving this man as his friend and taking his shit. And then I said, press play.
But that is some cold-blooded shit though.
It like, is 15 years, John. He's like right there in his face. He trusted this man. And then he's like celebrating like, oh, you know, Jackie Chan got the, I don't want to say cartel, but you know, all their stuff.
Right. The triads.
Yeah. He got like hold of the triad stuff and this man at the table like, oh my God. Yes. It's all. And it fooled me, you know, the first time I was like, oh, he's happy. That's a good friend. And I was like, what is something wrong with his eyes? It's like something in his eyes is like, I'm going to get you. And I ignored it.
He does seem like a snake.
Yeah.
So if you think about it.
His eyes just look suspect, you know.
I can see that. I mean,
it's like, oh, very good. You captured the triads. You're going to get that Jun Tao fella. You're going to do it.
Right. He ended up trying so hard to be on this dude's side and he's just backstabbing him for 15 years straight. And all that stuff is contraband from the Chinese artifacts. And he's like, so you're going to pack up your friend for 15 years and send him off to the U.S. just so his own daughter could get kidnapped by you.
I would so do like a Oprah show with those two. How did you feel when he betrayed you? 15 years. Answer the question. Like, oh my God. Okay. But it threw us off as an audience. I'm sorry. It threw us off as an audience because it challenges our own bias because he's talking about Jun Tao and we're like, oh, this is some white dude. And then it's like, surprise, I'm Jun Tao. I'm masquerading as him. And it's like, wait a minute, what? And then I found that out. I was like, what the white dude? What? I thought I was expecting some Asian dude. What? Oh my God. What is going on?
Right? Because you expect that to be just some Asian dude that's with Jun Tao and stuff like that. You don't expect the dude that's been friends with him for 15 years to backstab him.
And that is
Commander Thomas Griffin. He's actually part of the British commander. He's actually a British commander.
I'm telling you, John, the political intrigue, if you did deep in this film,
it has layers.
It has some deep layers. You can write a paper on Rush Hour. Chinese and U.S. relations. Go.
Right. But, you know, then you have this whole thing, too, where this comes into effect with the FBI, who informs Han about the incident and escapes protection for him while informing him they are on the case. Han distrustful of the FBI, partly because he and his family are not American citizens.
Mm-hmm.
He calls in Lee to assist in the case. The FBI, knowing Lee's potential of or lack of, will generate international embarrassment for them and decide to pawn him off on the LAPD. In the LAPD headquarters, Carter brags about his last case before his partner, Tenet Johnson, scolds him for not calling in backup. Carter claims he didn't need any partnership anyway before hinted by Johnson he may lose his job. Captain William Thiel has just in time received the call on being assigned by the FBI, and although initially disgusted, notices in an arriving Carter who wishes to explain himself. Thiel exaggerates on the case to play Carter that he was to be working for the FBI and was not going to be laid off, assigning him to handle Lee. Carter, still kept in the dark, proudly announces his new case. So I like how basically you have Carter who's bragging, goes, you see, I've saved two cops' lives. You see, it's in the newspaper. Never mind. You know how the media is. They're not going to put that in there. But yeah, I saved two cops' lives. And then you have Johnson who goes, you know, you could have just called in for backup, right? Man, you know, I don't need no partner. Never had no partner. Don't need no partner. I'm good. I don't need no partner. Mm-hmm. Really. Because the captain's about to fire your ass for doing what you did. He's about to let you go. And nah, he's good. I just saved two cops' lives. I'm good. I'm good. Mm-hmm. And he goes, so he goes over into the office just as the captain is over there talking to him. He goes, man, no one knows wants some bullshit case like this. This is a disgrace to my LAPD workers. Nobody's going to want this. And then he goes, hold on one sec. And he sees Carter coming in there. He goes, you know what? I have just a guy for you.
Yep.
So, and he goes, and so I like how Carter walks up in there. And he goes, man, what's this I hear about you wanting to fire me and letting me go? Nah, man, look. So a case just opened with the FBI. It's this big case. This Chinese daughter got kidnapped,
yep.
And they want you to work the case for the FBI. Wait, want me to work the case for the FBI? Okay. But yep. What do you think?
Yep. That was well played.
Thank you.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, we need more people like you, you know, just gung-ho, get out there, blow stuff up. I thought you were going to be mad at that. That's what I've been telling them. Yeah, we need more of them like that. That's why I put you on this special case. I'm going to be working with the FBI. Oh, my goodness. You know, you got to
like you just won the lottery. The way
you got to play to the ego of Carter. You know?
Right.
Like, get him to do stuff.
He's like the stepdad that is trying to punish his son for doing something wrong, and the son doesn't even realize what he's doing, that he did wrong.
Yeah, that's called good parenting.
But this was what makes me laugh, though, too, is like, you blew up a half a city block. There's still some left. You blew up the evidence. There's some left. Two cops were injured. They'll be okay. Yeah. They're in the hospital.
Yeah. He got his other finger.
But then he also brags over to the other LAPD officers. He goes, look, if anybody needs me, I'm going to be working for the FBI. Okay? So that's where I'm going to be at. I'm going to be working this big case. It's nice knowing you. Peace.
Yep. Boom. I'm out.
Yep.
Yep.
But I like, now let's talk about this. I like how Han, which is actually So Young's father, and he's like, look, I appreciate what you guys are doing. I appreciate what the FBI is doing. And I appreciate the fact that you're on my side. But at the same time, we're not American citizens. Yeah. You're here for the American citizens. You're not here for us. I need to send somebody that I can trust from the outside and bring him on the inside, because I don't really necessarily trust you guys on what you're doing, because you're not for us. and you're not necessarily against us, but you're not going to be there for us at, in general, because we're not American citizens.
Well, preach, John, preach. Testify. Oh, on Black History Month.
But, you know what I'm saying, though? I didn't look at it from those lenses as a kid watching this movie until now and realizing what he's actually talking about, because we're here for the laughs. We're here for Carter. We're not here about all this serious stuff. We're here to see Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan kick some ass and have some laughs along the way.
Yes, John. I was going to bring that point up. Especially when it got murky into I'm not a U.S. citizen, this is an international case, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's deep, you know. Like, you see it through a different lens. You're growing up, you're looking at the world differently, and then you look at Rush Hour differently. You look at Rush Hour differently, and you're like, man, there's some serious stuff here, some layers. And you're like, well, why does Carter not want a partner? Why does he risk his life to be gung-ho all the time? And then you got Lee. I don't want to do no analysis, deep analysis, because we don't have a long night for that. But yeah, just looking at it now, I'm like, oh, this movie is deep. Like, it's funny still, but it's deep.
It is that. It definitely has some deep layers to it.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, I wasn't expecting that. I don't even remember the dialogue within that. I think when I was a young kid, I got lost in translation somewhere where I'm like daydreaming at this point in the movie theater to where I just X and nay that part out.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, just give me Chris Tucker again. Give me this. I don't care about the case. I don't care about this point. I want to get to the action. I want to get to the laughs.
Yeah,
that's how I was. But looking at it like this, it makes me enjoy the movie even more because of how realistic and relatable it can be.
Yeah. Me too. Me too.
Okay. So now Carter arrives at the embassy and is briefed by a special agent in charge, Warren Russ, who reveals the truth on his case. Carter is now to pick up Lee, who arrives that afternoon at the Los Angeles International Airport, calling his superior on the case. Dale reveals he too was in on it and gave Carter a choice. Keep Lee away from the investigation or face 2 months suspension without pay. Angry at his precinct, Carter agrees while secretly intending to solve the case himself. Lee tries to inform Carter about going to the embassy in Soyang, but Carter proceeds to take him on a sightseeing tour of Los Angeles. So intentionally keeping Lee away and contacting several of his underworld informants about his information regarding the kidnapping in the process, Stucky is bribed to reveal an anonymous person who has been secretly buying a huge amount of weapons, confirmed by Carter's cousin, Luke, while in a bar, adds that the person came from Hong Kong but knows nothing more about him since he bought none from Luke, who also deals in firearms on the black market.
Yeah.
So let's go on ahead. Let's narrow this down real quick. Mm-hmm. Too. Mm-hmm. So I like how Carter just goes in there. He's acting like a big shot now. He's part of the FBI team, he thinks. He goes, hey, bro. Yeah. Look, I need one of those little earpieces right there. Yeah, I do that. Make sure you get me one of those. And then he goes, oh, what are you two up to? He goes, okay, we're going to brief you on what's going on here. You are to keep Agent Lee, Officer Lee, away from the premises.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, wait, I thought I was working the case. I thought there was this big, huge case. What's up? He goes, no, you're not going to be working it. He goes, man, this is some bullshit. And then he calls up the captain. He goes, Cap, I thought that I was supposed to be working this big-ass case, and now they want me to babysit some guy that's coming in from Hong Kong. What the hell is going on? I'm not doing this shit. He goes, yes, you are, Lee, or else you're going to be suspended for 2 months without pay.
Yep.
And everybody's over there just laughing their ass off at Carter now because they realize he's just got a babysitter position instead of actually working a tight-end case like he wanted.
Yeah. This man want to be taken seriously as a police officer, an LAPD police officer, working with the FBI. And now he just glorified babysitter.
And I like also, too, it's classified G-14. Classified.
Yeah. Yeah. Classified.
okay, okay, not a problem, okay. And he goes over to the airport, picks up Lee, and, you know, I like his first introduction. He gets off the plane. Chris is over there. You have Lee, you have Chris over there just waiting on him. And he goes, "I am Detective Carter." Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Man, they can't make this movie now.
No, really they couldn't. Movie. They couldn't make this movie, but it's funny now looking at
racist.
It.
Racist. Do you speak English?
And he's over there just smiling at the dude.
Yeah.
Lee's over there just smiling at him.
He stuck me with rice and roni. I was like, oh my God, it just gets worse.
Right? And then instead of him getting inside the car, Carter, you have Lee who just goes, because remember, he has a sports car.
Mm-hmm.
So he just goes on ahead and just basically just climbs over the door like Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, ah, oh, hell no. Hell no. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The whole time he thought that man, okay, so we are Carter, the American audience, because we don't know if he speaks English.
Right. That's we deep. Just assume he doesn't.
That's deep. It's like layer. Don't have time. But we didn't know.
I have time.
We didn't know through our biases that right. He speaks English. So we're Carter. We're like, do you, which people that are bilingual say, why are you yelling if people that don't speak another language, they're not deaf? You're right. Like, do you speak English? I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just, and then like, you know, maybe like midpoint in the movie, he's like, oh yeah, I'm just showing him how to do this trick with this, da da da. He's like, you spoke English right. The whole time? It's like, yeah, you just assumed that I didn't speak English, and plus you talk a lot. So I just like you talk.
I wanted to see how much bullshit you actually talked.
Yeah. He's like, what the hell did you just say?
You assumed that I didn't speak English.
Yeah.
Therefore, because you assumed that I don't speak English, you think that I don't speak English.
Yeah.
Because what the hell did you just say?
Yeah.
And then also too, whenever they're both pointing guns at each other, you have the other taxi driver that's also pointing a gun at them. Mm-hmm. And then they both wind up taking their guns with their fingers off the trigger. He goes, oh, I was just trying to teach him how to take gun away from suspect.
Yeah. With a gong. Yeah. Yeah. And then he took him, remember what, before he revealed that he speaks English, he took him to Chinatown.
Yeah, he took him to Chinatown. He goes,
yeah.
Look, this looks just like your country.
Yeah, look, it looks just like home. You may see one of your cousins around here somewhere. I said, oh my God. I guess. 1998, we were like, ha ha, so funny. Now you're right. Like, oh my gosh.
This man is about to get killed by Jackie.
Oh my gosh. So racist.
He also goes over to the informant and goes, what do you know? He goes, man, all I do is sell maps. That's all I know. That's all you know? That's all you do? You sell maps?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, give me one of those maps for $5. And then at that point, you have you wind up having Jackie Chan going on one of those tour buses.
Yes. Yeah, he snuck on that, and then Chris Tuck was like,
yep.
Basically, he like, why'd you run away? And he got caught up in the glamour because the Chinese tour was taking his picture. He was like, wait, hold on. I was like, oh my gosh. And then didn't Jackie Chan like jump on a
yeah, Lee winds up jumping onto a billboard that's hanging down or something.
Yeah, and got off the bus that way. I was like, that is just so smooth. If I did that, I'd just be splat on the
me floor. Too. I couldn't even do it. I'd be like Carter, to be honest with you. I would just be splat as a pancake, to be honest with you.
We are Carter. We are Carter. Da, 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 da.
And then he takes him over to his cousins.
He's like, anyways.
But then he takes him over to his cousins, remember? He takes him over to there. And I'll let you break down that scene because I'm not going to break it down.
Oh my God. Oh yeah. I have to. Yeah. Cause I'm black. So I have to do that. He came in like, What's up, nigga? That's pretty much it. It was just like N word. Right. And, Jackie Chan's absorbing all this. Like, oh, this is how Americans greet each other. And so, then, you know, yeah, go ahead.
He goes, man, what are you smoking? This is weed. He goes, a cigarette? He goes, man, this looks like cigarette weed. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And he goes over to see his cousin who's having this night. He has a nice suit on and stuff like that. So he goes, what do you know about this girl? What girl? You know the girl, So Young. He goes, man, I don't know nothing about no damn girl. Just the hell you do? And then he's trying to act like he's not pressing him or anything like that when Lee's not around. And then Lee comes back into the room. Because what do you know about that girl? Can't get your damn hands off my suit.
Yeah, your
mama bought me this suit.
Yeah, she shouldn't have done that. I mean, I'm just distracted by that big Kool-Aid suit he had on.
But he winds up telling him that. But go ahead, Tamika.
No, you go ahead.
But he winds up telling him, though, that, you know, that there is somebody, a new buyer in town. Nobody knows his name. Because, man, nobody knows his damn name. What the hell? And then at this point, you have Lee who's standing outside. And then they wind up getting into a whole entire, they wind up fighting. Everybody, yeah, in the pool hall, remember?
Yeah, but that's because he said, what's up, my nigga? He said, what you say? What's up, my nigga? That's what guy's ass beat. Well, yep. Actually, he beat their ass, but that's what got the first punch.
Yeah, that would
like,
do it.
What? What's wrong? That's what he said, which is the problem. Okay, that's the problem. Come on, America.
But yeah. But I like, what do you think of the whole entire fight scene though, with him at the pool tables and stuff like that, him breaking the pool stick? I thought those were pretty good scenes.
John, I need to pay for a glamour team, hair team, weird stuff. Okay.
Look, sorry. I'm on a short budget, ma'am, so I don't have time.
You need to get with it. Okay. I need a glamour squad over here. Jeez. Okay. Yes, I liked all of Jackie Chan's action scenes. When you watch the bloopers or the outtakes, you see that he did get hurt and you appreciate his art much more. Cause it's finesse that goes along with action sequences. You know, it's like a dance. You know, you can't be too early. You can't be too late cause then it'll throw the whole thing off. But yeah, he did get hit a couple times with that pool stick.
Yeah, and then he winds up, he still goes up to the old man and goes, this is bad for you. And
he said he got glaucoma.
Right, and then this man Carter is over there still pressing the dude whenever he comes in there. And he goes, he might not know something. He's done. He doesn't know anything. Hmm. He goes, we're going to go. And then we have, after several mishaps, Lee finally gets away from Carter, knowing he was stalling for time. And makes his way to Chinese the consulate, where an anxious Han and a group of FBI agents are awaiting news about his daughter. Lee had to sneak in, given the guards don't know who he is, and was suspected to be involved in the kidnapping. After mentioning So Young's name, upon meeting Han, he is evidently revealed and his actions cleared as a misunderstanding. Given Carter failed to keep Lee away, he is confronted by Russ before introduced to Han by Lee, who knows that they were both played by the FBI to be kept away despite being assigned. Carter tries to use the moment to question Russ, but Russ attempts to pull Carter away to talk privately, which Carter counters by saying he would clarify with his superior about the matter before acknowledging picking up an incoming mysterious phone call. When taking the telephone, Carter involves himself in a conversation with the kidnappers who are online, where he arranges a ransom drop. So, I like how this gets played out though too, where Carter winds up taking Lee's hand and goes, man, what are you doing? He goes, man, I'm gonna go on ahead and get me something to eat. You want anything? He goes, nah, I'm just gonna stay here. He goes, man, let me see your hands. he slaps the handcuffs on him and handcuffs him to the steering wheel. He goes, "What? You thought you were the only one with the fast?" He goes, "Ooh!" And then, but yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, and that's the other problem. As I'm spoiling the fun of the movie, he walked in there. They don't even know that that's a Chinese policeman. They're like, "We got the intruder alert." Like, I just can't deal with it.
Right.
But then again, nobody knows who Joan Tao is or looks like. So
no, other than Lee, but Lee also doesn't even really know what he looks like either.
Yeah, because it's like a Scooby-Doo mystery.
Right. But I liked how, you know, he's still strapped to the steering wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he still has a steering wheel attached to him. He goes over the wall of this gigantic wall to the mansion.
Yeah.
And he takes the camera, turns it around the other way, and then goes over the wall.
Smooth. Yeah. I mean, it's like I can't describe what he did. It's like he hiked up the wall, like this brick wall or whatever, and then got to the top. Like you said, turn the camera. I'd try anything like that.
Same. I would do the same thing. But I'd probably break my neck.
When you see like the bloopers, cause it comes after the movie, you see he like tried multiple times and failed, but still, he's still like a superhero.
Right? He just gets right back up again and does it again.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then they realize, oh, who is this? Oh, he goes, "Look, I'm here for So-young." That was like the very first of it. And then he goes up the wall and climbs in. And then after that, he winds up having a face-off with the FBI agents. Takes the FBI agents' guns and everything. And then he takes his whole entire holster, points it at him and the gun. And then after that, after everything is settled down, they said, "Look, I'm Detective Lee. I'm from Hong Kong. I'm actually friends of So-young." And then at that point, they're dark at this point. And then you have Carter that comes in with a tow truck.
Eating a bonbon or whatever he eats.
And then that's when you have one of the FBI agent, who winds up saying, Russ winds up saying, "Can I talk to you privately?" He goes, "Oh, is this one of those G-14 classifieds? You know, FBI type stuff."
Yeah. And he said, "You know, take your sensitive ass in there and open this gate." I was like, "What? Dang." Oh, he told him to go screw himself.
Right.
And he told Carter, cause he was like, "Man, it was so weird."
But you know what, though? The other guy, the kind of short, stocky, fat guy, kind of reminds me of the guy from Beverly Hills Cop a little bit.
Not the one with, like, the blonde.
No, the one that's kind of ball-headed.
Yeah, he does.
He reminded me of him in so many ways, but it's not the same actor. But it just, he has that kind of vibe to him that same actor and character is.
Well, the blonde-headed guy was in Shawshank Redemption, which is my family's favorite movie for some reason.
I love that movie.
Yeah, he played one of the prisoners that was raping people. So when I saw him, I was like, "Ew, he's in the FBI, gross."
Right. But, you know, and then there's also this other thing I forgot to mention. Remember whenever Jackie Chan's character, Lee, goes, "I'm here for So-young." He goes, "The girl don't even like you. I don't like you." But whenever he meets up with Lee again, and they said, "Look, Carter's very passionate about getting your daughter back. We're here to work the case. We're here for you." And then right after he vouches for him, you get that call, that ransom call.
Yeah.
So-young's daughter. And then it goes downhill because Carter winds up, because with Joan Tao, he goes, "Okay, I got your daughter. I no witnesses. I want 51. He gives him a lowdown of what he.
Yeah, 15. And then he's like, "You want surprise with that?" Cause he like naming all, like, "I want 50s and this. I want this and that and that and that." He's like, "Who am I speaking to? Who you speak to? You call me, man." Oh, my God.
Because why do you want to know who I am? Because I'm gonna because I want to know who's responsible for the guy, the daughter's death.
Yep.
For running his mouth too much.
Yep.
I'm like, well, so much for that, Lee. You just vouched for Carter, and then Carter winds up making the person that's holding the guy's daughter hostage.
But he did keep going. He was like, anyways, just bring the money here. And he was like, yeah, we'll bring, listen, I'm not even with them, man. We can just split it down the middle because I don't even know them, you know.
I don't even work for them. He's not lying, though. He doesn't work for the FBI. Yeah. He works for LAPD, so he's really not lying.
Yeah, I never seen a henchman sigh so hard. A man's like, oh, click. Goodbye.
Because $50 million, who do you have? Chelsea Clinton?
Yes, he got that line right.
But yeah, then after that, you had the FBI swiftly managing to track the source of the phone call to a location downtown and Mobley's special forces to the location. Lee tries to warn the FBI that something is amiss, but is brushed off until a bomb inside the building is detonating, killing the special forces inside. Spotting a Sing nearby, Lee gives a chase and Carter follows, saying, leading them into an abandoned apartment. He fights Lee briefly before running away and tripping over a bridge and a construction, dropping a rare type of detonator in the process. Lee picks it up after tripping on the same bridge and knows the flooring will break, but it's too late to stop an arriving Carter, who causes them to fall. Despite Carter firing on the car, Sing enters. Sang manages to escape again, noticing the detonator Lee picked up. Carter decides their next move is having determined Sang had rigged the building to explode via the detonator.
Mm.
So yeah. I like how they track it. Mm-hmm. And Lee's over there saying, look, would you, if you were asking for that much money, would you be in this building?
Yeah.
And what would your thought process be?
I probably wouldn't have been as smart as me. Probably would have had some shrapnel. I'm like, da, 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 da. Ah! Oh my gosh. But yeah, Lee was on it. He was like, why would you be in this building asking for money? Would you be there? Yeah.
Right.
Cause he's like, something's amiss. Something's not right about this. Of course, American FBI was like, get this clown out of my face.
Well, even Carter's like, well, we should go tell him. So he goes on ahead and goes and tells him, and Lee's in the back, and Carter's in the back.
Yeah. That ain't right.
No, I mean, he just lets him have to fall for it.
Team Carter.
But I thought the fight sequence between Chang and him were really good. I really liked how that during the construction site and stuff like that, I was like on the edge of my seat seeing the martial arts and stuff like that for it. And then he falls through the little construction thing and then he falls like in the middle of it. And then here comes Carter and then they both fall down and then there's the detonator and then they go see Cliff.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean that I'm glad Carter thought about that. Cause he was like, is this C4? And he knew instantly to go to his partner who doesn't like him.
Right.
Cause she deals with explosives.
Go on ahead and break that scene down though. Because remember, she's over there testing for the C4.
Yeah.
She's trying to stop. That has to be nerve wracking.
Yeah. I guess they do these, tests. Like if you're in the bomb squad, they do these fake bombs that you have a couple minutes or seconds to disarm it or else it's going to explode, which is just a powder, not like a real explosion. But yeah, Carter was over there. He was like, hey! And then she's like, oh! And then it just kind of blew up. She's like, I was distracted, sir. He's like, well, we have distractions in the field. You just killed us all. Which he had a point, though. Like, you're going to have all kind of distractions, so you kind of just, you know, stay focused. But just, who has a Carter distraction that it'd be like, hey, banging on the glass. I don't know him. if you were trying to disarm a bomb and then you hear, hey, when you like go, oh my God, which one is it? Red, green?
She was about to kill him though. You could definitely tell she was just done with him.
Yeah.
But then she goes, well, I have to go see Cliff because Cliff knows about C4. And this is one of my other favorite scenes. And I always loved this actor that's in it. He played in Reservoir Dogs. He played in other mafia type, Corky Romano, my bad. He played in other mafioso kind of movies and stuff like that.
Is that Sean Penn's brother?
I don't know. I just know that I didn't do that much research on this comedy actor. But still, I always liked him whenever he was popping up and stuff. He also played in Best of the Best.
Oh, yeah. I think I remember him. I think he...
Yeah, he played like the racist cowboy.
Ugh.
Yeah. But anyways, but he comes in and he goes, hey, Cliff, I got something for you to play with. He goes, wait, you don't want it?
Mm,
I'm not touching that. He goes, why? Because you're my planet. He goes, come on. I brought you a little toy. I thought you were kind of bored and you're lonely at night. I thought you might want it. I'm not touching that. I'm not touching it.
Mm-mm.
And he goes, so what can you tell me about it? And then he winds up telling him about the C4. He winds up telling him about Jun Tao. And then this is another thing. He goes, well, you can kiss my fat ass. He goes, well, it'll take me all day long to kiss your fat ass. Next time I see you, I'm going to bring you and your fat ass a thing of cookies.
Yeah.
Next time.
See, that ain't right.
And even the security guard, though, too, made me laugh because, man, it's late now. We're not allowing any visitors. And he's like, come on, man. Remember the time when I made you that you smoked weed? And you smoked it with me, but I gave you the bigger half.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he got him that job, too, or introduced him to his wife or whatever it was that got him in there. Some kind of favor.
But... I just thought it was funny, like, nobody else is busy on guard at nighttime or anything like that. And it was like, they just had him in the back, you know, like, you're looking for, like, an item at Walmart or anything. Hey, yeah, Carter, he's looking for Cliff. Yeah, we got Cliff.
Yeah.
Just bring him on back. We have him in the back already, ready for him to come out.
John, this was 1998.
Yeah, you're right.
They weren't that busy back then. They weren't busy back then in jail. They could just pull people out. Hey, Cliff, come on.
Come on, Cliff. You ain't got nothing else to do.
Yeah, you got some visitors.
But yeah, now you got this other thing that happens. Finding Johnson at LAPD headquarters, who identifies the detonator, able to detonate various explosives, including C4. Carter Lee head to the prison, like I said, and talked to Warren Bobby to letting them see Cliff. Cliff was initially resistant, especially given what Carter did to him. But after pursuing from Lee, he informs that Jun Tao, whom he never saw before, was behind the kidnapping and was the one who sold him the C4 from earlier, followed by a lead by Cliff to Fu Cho restaurant in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
Carter and Lee scoped the place out, saying... calls the consul on the drop location being the same restaurant in Chinatown, and Carter notices Sang entering it, which confirms their lead. Carter decides to go in first under telling the waitress that he was Jun Tao's lawyer and calling him to meet. The waitress informs Sang of the matter. BIA surveillance notices, ordering Carter to be brought up to where they were. However, Griffin, who was present, tells to evacuate Soo-young off the premises, noticing that Lee has now entered the restaurant. Carter, upon entering, sees the surveillance video of Griffin sending the van, which contains Soo-young, off, but does not know who he is, tortured and ordered by Sang to be executed. Lee arrives in time and rescues Carter after a fight in the restaurant with Lee, snatching a pendant he recalls giving to Soo-young from a waitress wearing it. They are met outside by the FBI, led by Russ, who blames them for ruining the ransom exchange. Hmm. So, yeah, I love this whole entire thing at Chinatown where they're scoping it out at Fu Cho. restaurant, and they're getting to know each other. They're bonding now. There's more to them now. They're having that brother relationship between the two of them. And he goes, man, what'd you get? He goes, man, I got camel hump.
Camel hump.
What'd you get? I also like how Carter looks at the guy at the Chinese restaurant and he goes, man, you don't have no chicken wings. You don't have no greens. You don't have none of that. He goes, man, we don't have no soul food here.
Yeah. I ain't asking you on soul food. I just said you got some chills. I'm a punk bitch. Who are you calling a punk bitch? Wait a minute. This escalated quickly.
It's LA.
Wow. I bet he had chicken wings next time, though.
Yeah. My thing is this. Chinese restaurants have chicken wings. Why doesn't he have chicken wings?
Yeah. Well, this seemed like a specialty one. He had camel hump and eel.
Yeah, eel.
Yeah.
And I like how they're scoping it out and they're singing war. Just, what is it good for?
Absolutely.
You all.
It's y'all. Yo. Y'all. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, I feel like I'm in a cheap Chinese movie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, y'all. Yeah.
I like how Lee is like, y'all. Like his lips are curling up and everything, trying to say y'all.
You all. This y'all. Yeah. Yeah.
Y'all.
Oh my God. I'm like, this. Oh my God.
Then they wind up talking, and then I like how they're smack talking each other. He goes, yeah, my dad could do this and that. Remember?
Yeah. My daddy can kick your daddy's ass. Hey now.
All over America.
Yeah.
Like that.
Dang. Yeah. Trying to one up each other with their dance. But yeah, like you said, I like that bonding time when they were scoping out the Chinese restaurant, before they went in. And some kind of way he went in first, Carter. I don't know how that happened. Who thought that was a good idea?
Well, Carter thought of that first because since you also have Lee, who's from Hong Kong, they would probably recognize him more.
Yeah, that's true.
So he figured, okay, since it's now someone that might be connected with him, it might be easier for someone to go in versus him.
Yeah.
So that's understandable.
Because Carter's black. Yeah.
I
never suspect a black guy. Let me just walk on in here. Hey, I'm looking for Jun Chow. Who? Jun Chow. Tell him to get out here. Come on, hurry up.
Jeez. I'm his lawyer.
Yeah, can I see here? Yeah. Y'all got some eel? How your camel hump?
You got a camel hump? Yeah, I got camel hump. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, he already hooked on camel hump.
Right. And then I like how he looks at the plate like he's disgusted by it because he's like... He's basically the Gordon Ramsay of Chinese food at that point.
Yeah. Let me tell you, son. They had to hurry and get him out of here.
But, you know, the quote that I was thinking of, though, with him smack talking, he's like, my daddy once saved five crackheads from a burning building by himself. My daddy once caught a bullet with his bare hand. My daddy would kick your daddy's ass all the way here to China, Japan, wherever the hell you're from. And all up the Great Wall, too. Hey, don't talk about the Great Wall.
That messed up, man. Yeah. My dad said five crackheads from a burning building.
But no, I liked how, like you mentioned, with him absorbing everything and taking it all in, and he finally gets upstairs with Chang and goes, he doesn't even believe that he's even a lawyer or anything or a cop. He believes he's more of a cop. Man, I'm a security guard at a mall.
Yeah, he's like, hey, where Jun Chow at? Why y'all standing around?
And then he goes, remember? Like, where he was going to try and kill him. Because, man, he means let me go. He didn't mean to kill me.
No. I remember the first one where he kicked him. He's like, which one of y'all kicked me? And he's like, me. I'll kick your ass.
And then after that happens, that's when, you have that confrontation between him and Zhang Tao. And then just as he's about to get killed because he sees the badge and he automatically thinks of FBI. I'm like, dude, it says LAPD on his badge. It's not FBI, but.
Yeah, and then his hero comes in, which is Lee. He was like, yeah. LAPD. He
flips out his hand. Tray at someone at them. Yeah.
See, you take note of Jackie Chan. He used everything. He used a tray. If it's a chair in the way, you pick up the chair. You use every object that's in your way to fight.
That's very true. He ended up using everything he could find, even the little recliner seat. He just sat in it, kicked somebody's ass while sitting down, and also takes the chair and turns it over while he's sitting down, trips somebody, goes back over there, and he winds up kicking someone's ass again while sitting down on his ass.
Yeah, I grew up with Kung Fu movie, so my mouth was open the whole time. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I didn't know that was humanly possible. I couldn't even think of things like that. If I was in a fight, I couldn't really think. Lean the recliner back, tilt the recliner over, hit the guy in the face. I'm like, there's like 7-8 moves there.
Right. And the thing that I love about Jackie Chan's martial arts is it's comedy mixed in with action sequences and stuff like that. So you're laughing and you're also being wowed at the same time by the fact that this guy is able to do what he does.
Yeah.
So really loved the whole entire martial arts aspect that he brings to it, because it's something that we haven't seen before where you're using humor with your martial arts. Yeah. And it's also amplifying the story as well. So I really like how he does that in all his movies.
Yeah, he became the comedian of the martial arts world. I remember watching Drunken Master.
Me too. Legend of the Drunken Master.
Yeah, one of those. And then he was like, you know, drunk, and then he just like karate chopped some guy in the face, and people underestimate him. He's like, he's just a stupid drunk. You can punch him in the face. He's like, you know. So I don't, maybe I've seen a Jackie Chan documentary long ago where he wasn't really taken seriously in Hong Kong. Don't quote me, because he was trying to put comedy in the martial arts. And then they were like, no, those two don't mix. So he was on the outskirts.
Now he's like, hold my beer.
Yeah. And now everybody's doing it.
But I also like how he absorbs the necklace around the waitress's neck, though, too, while he's waiting downstairs. Yeah. And he's like, wait, that would piss me. That actually pissed me off now as an adult.
Yep.
Let's see. Ash Whitsnip says they are so talented.
Yeah
they are.
Yeah,
they're totally, very talented.
Totally. Yep.
Yep. But I like how he's also, like I said, he sees the necklace around the waitress's neck. He takes the necklace after she gets knocked out, takes it, and takes it back. And then, of course, now the FBI is blaming them for their screw-up and everything. And what, now Lee's back on the plane. Yeah.
Sorry, do you think they would have really handed her over if they didn't get involved?
No. There's no chance that they would even – they would take the money and probably even kill her. There was Elizabeth Pina who acted with Jackie Chan as the army helper to save a little girl. Yep. But, you know, I think that either way it goes, they wouldn't have been able to save the girl right then and there. You know, they're going to take the money and they're going to go. They're not going to just say, okay, well, you have the girl now and here you go. No, they're going to wind up keeping her.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess so. I guess you can't ever trust them. Even if you bring money, they'll be like, give me the money. I still got the girl. Let's go.
Exactly. So now Carter tries to explain to Russ, but is revoked instead of taking the case in his hands. Now jeopardizing the whole ordeal, Carter attempts to insist that he agrees with Lee to not negotiate with kidnappers, but Russ takes them off the investigation. Lee is informed that he will be sent back to Hong Kong with both ordered not to intervene further. Lee, too, tries to explain to a disappointed Han and mentions the kidnappers was Juntao. Shocking Han, Carter enters the room and hopes to apologize. But Han says it was too late, just then saying, phones the consul angrily, telling him that the ransom has been increased from 50 million to 70 million, wow, and begins threatening Soo-young's life. If anything goes wrong, guilt-ridden Carter apologizes to Lee, but a disgraced Lee tells him to feel sorry for Soo-young instead. Mm-hmm. Griffin unbrokenly to Han that he is part of the kidnapping arrives later that day to console Han. Mm. But your old friend from 15 years ago is over there apologizing in a mafia kind of way of saying, hey, I'm sorry that your daughter got taken by me. Everything's going to work out. I'm the one who's doing it. That's pretty screwed up.
I'm trying to think when he did that reveal. Because I know he came to him before and he was like...
Well, I'd put that as like a side note for me.
Yeah.
He didn't really say it, but you know, he's a ball bag. He's been friends with him for 15 years. And you're going to go on ahead and just go into this guy's face like, hey, look, man, we're going to pay the ransom, give him what he wants. And that's it. And you get your daughter back.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, like gullible people like me are like, that's a caring friend. I mean, it's not suspicious about his eyes, but he's seeing caring. Like, I didn't know until he revealed this. And I was like, oh, he's the... I was like, come on.
Right?
I was just in shock. I was like, oh, my God. How dare he deceive me? I can't believe he jumped out.
But... You know, and then you have Lee and you have Carter. Carter's trying to apologize. And at this point, you know, Carter just still cares about himself at this moment, in a sense. And then as soon as he says, feel bad for Soo-young, when where you wind up having that one part, then he realizes, okay, this is not about me anymore. This is now about the little girl.
Yeah.
And I need to do something about it.
And that's when he grew a heart.
And then this is also where you have that scene on the airplane where Carter disguises himself as one of the airline attendants or something, and he winds up going inside the airplane, and this is where he goes, man, you don't care about nobody but yourself. He goes, man, my dad was a cop. My dad got my dad ended up getting shot when he was trying to give a speeding ticket to somebody.
Yeah.
I don't want to be for all for nothing.
Yeah, yeah. He was like I forgot where the partner was at. But I'm pretty much sure his dad was just doing the same thing he was doing. I'm just going to get this ticket by myself. It's no big deal. I don't need a partner. With speeding tickets are always a big deal. You never know. Right. People are crazy.
That's true. That's very true. And I'm, you know what? I know that I pitched this before, but I wish that they would actually make it revolved around Carter for, Rush Hour 4, where it explains the father's death. Maybe that's connected in with, the triads or something like that. Maybe it wasn't just a ticket. Maybe something was sponged.
What?
So that was something that I was thinking instead of being, because the first three Rush Hour movies was revolved with nothing but Jackie's character. It'd be a fun little spin if they did it with Carter now instead of it being primarily focused on Lee.
Oh, yeah, that would be nice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was my little pitch that I did a while back.
All right, we're going to call Hollywood right after this. That's not a phone, sorry.
But finally realizing Soo-young's safety is more important than his career, Carter refuses to drop the case and acknowledges his wrongdoing to Johnson. He requests to her to aid him in the case as his partner, which she agrees, confronting Lee on his plane, and Carter tells Lee about the death of his father, also a police officer killed at the routine traffic stop, like I mentioned, because his partner didn't help him. There was a reason why Carter was distrustful of partners, which he learned from his father. Lee is surprised as before then. Carter has seemed to care about no one but himself, like I mentioned, regaining themselves. They decide to save Soo-young together. The consul in phone again, telling him that the drop will happen at the Chinese culture exhibit he is hosting that evening and is made to promise nothing will go wrong. Han gives his word and wishes his daughter not to be harmed. And Han explained to the FBI about Jun Tao having been unsuccessfully stopped by the British because of his asshole friend. Jun Tao would now kidnap Soo Young since Han and Lee had managed to foil Jun Tao in every aspect. Griffin then suggests Han paid the ransom to ensure Soo Young's well-being because he's a rich asshole. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and I still didn't suspect the thing.
But yeah, we'll just talk about the final end, the ending and stuff like that. So,
okay, let's do it.
Okay, so I like how now we're finally getting into this. We got the art, you have the exhibit going on. You actually have Johnson that's now fully signed up on Carter's team. And even though whenever he's also on the bridge, he goes, what color panties you're wearing? Whenever he's trying to get her on board. But still, I like the whole entire setup of them going into the exhibit and trying to stop Jun Tao and trying to stop everything from going down.
Yeah.
And so what did you think of the whole entire, the scenes and stuff?
Yes. I like this, rogue band that they had. They're outside of the FBI because the FBI shut them out because they're trying to do this their way. So you got Lee Carter, Carter's partner, I forgot her name. Oh, Elizabeth, yeah.
Johnson.
Yeah. Oh, that's her name in the movie?
That's her last name, Johnson.
Oh, well, oh yeah, they got Johnson. So they got like this rogue band and they're like, okay, we're going to do it our way to get the girl back. We're not going to do it the FBI way. They're going like, okay, let's just cooperate. No, we're going to find out who is Jun Tao, and then we're going to kick his ass, and then we're going to save the console and all these arts, which they didn't do. Oh, they got the girl back, but the art is...
it's pretty much gone at this point.
Millions of years worth of Chinese art is just damaged in the crossfire.
But I thought it was funny, though, as how Lee is trying to reserve everything and try not to let anything break. Especially that huge ass face that he has.
Yes.
And he's over there fighting everybody. And then you have Carter who's also, fighting everyone as well, but he's also trying to make his way to the van. He goes outside where the van is while Griffin's over there making the speech and he winds up finding, he goes, okay, not a problem, Soo Young, not a problem. He goes, no, don't touch the vest because if you touch the vest or anything, it's going to explode. I heard these men tell me that. So now he has to bring in Johnson to defuse the bomb. And so now she's being nervous, just as nervous as she was when she was doing the training.
Yeah.
So now it's real life. Now it's do or die.
Yeah. My favorite is when he brought the little girl in. He was like, come on, Jun Tao, push the button. And she's like, what are you doing? Just play along. Push the button.
Yeah, push the button. Push the GD button. Yeah,
push the button. Come on. Push it. Push it.
You know what? I actually used that as a short one time to get people to smash the subscribe button.
Come on. Push the button.
Push the button. Push the button. Push.
Push it.
Yeah. But at that point, it's already diffused and stuff like that. But I thought the back and forth between him and Soo Young was really funny. The shootout was really good.
Yeah.
And the one thing I have to say is the action sequence within this film is really good. No shaky cam. You're able to see all the action going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I definitely have to say that I really loved about the film as well was you get to see all the action sequences.
Yes. And then the ending with Jun Tao did that, is it Hans Gruber from Die Hard?
Yeah,
you know, when they like when they fall off, and he's like, yeah, and then it was just Lee hanging on, yeah. And he's like, Kada, like that scene. It was so suspenseful to me because he's just like hanging out there. It's like I'm like, is Jackie Chan gonna die? Which he didn't do, but you looking at it, you're like, oh my god, Jackie Chan is like hanging from the ceiling, right. And this little red. I don't know what that is, a sheet or curtain supposed to be pulled across a pool and that's supposed to catch Jackie Chan.
It almost feels like a Looney Tunes thing, right? Where basically you have this huge ass thing that's hanging up that's supposed to be catching him, and he falls down on it and slides down.
I need to know how they did that stunt. There had to be a wire or something, because there ain't no way Jackie Chan would have just fell on that sheet and then slid down perfectly. Well, not perfectly, but.
But one other thing, though, don't forget, you also have the showdown thing from the main bad guy that Lee's been after, Jung Tao.
Oh.
And you also have Carter. And remember, he goes, come on, fight me like a man. Put down your gun. Just like how he said inside the Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, fight me like a man.
Fight me like a man. Fight me like a man. So he goes on ahead. He acts like he's going to go in and put the gun down, but he also knows Jean Tao's not going to go on ahead and just lay down his gun. So just as he's about to fire his Uzi, Jean Tao is, he goes on ahead and shoots him about two or three times in the chest, and he dies, and then he goes, clean yourself up, you're dead.
Okay, so that stunt, I'm trying to just, like, if that was me, because he dropped back, and then he had a gun, like, in his ankle. You know, it's like the way he dropped back, the way Carter dropped back or something like that. He had the gun in his ankle, and that's how he was able to shoot him.
Right.
In the chest. It's like, how do you come up with things like this? You know, like, if you're in a real fight, and then somebody's like, yeah, let's fight, and then you see him grab for something extra. Like, I'd be like, hold on, this darn buckle.
That'll be my luck. I'm actually the guy that gets caught on the fence of something when something looks so easy to someone else.
You know what I mean? Struggling to get my gun out of the holster. I'm like, you're gonna shoot me.
But yeah, then you also have, after that goes down, you actually have, So Young was reunited with Lee, returning So Young, her pendant and her thanking him. Han sends Carter and Lee on vacation together to Hong Kong for a well-deserved break on first class. Before leaving at the airport, Agent Russ and Agent Whitney show up and offer Carter a position at the FBI. Carter refuses rudely, telling them off for his mistreatment at their hands, and states that he will always be loyal to the LAPD. On the plane, Carter hands an attendant his bag and sits next to Lee. A stewardess approaches them, and Carter shows off a couple of Chinese lines to Lee, who is impressed as he had no idea Carter learned to speak Chinese. When arriving the flight duration, Lee tells Carter that it may take 15 hours, surprise Carter, who then immediately requests a new seat as soon as Lee starts singing more, much to his annoyance. So it actually goes into how the second movie starts off, where we leave from the first one. Me too.
I think they still do, some movies still do that, but that's a smooth transition, you know, because it was popular in the 90s. It's like, we're going to give you a little bit of the second movie and then cut. And then you get to, you know, you're not lost.
Right.
You're like, okay, I know where we are now. Cause when I saw Rush Hour 2, I was like, Hong Kong, got it. They came from the plane and they're on Hong Kong.
Exactly. And that's something that I like. That's something that I wish that movies would do today is continue it off where we left off at.
Yeah. Why not?
Now, and just mention the fact of where someone is going and then take off where you left off and go to that place that they said that they were going to go. You know?
Yeah. Well, now you just get like this, those giant letters across the screen, like Budapest. And you're like, whoa. Right.
How did we wind up here? It's just like all of a sudden now we're supposed to believe that they're there at a certain location or another character's at a different location. But yeah. But I do like the fact that Carter gives it back over to Lee. Because when Lee goes, oh, I didn't know you knew how to speak, Chinese. Because you assumed I didn't know how to learn Chinese, but I do know how to learn Chinese. So therefore I know. So he gave that back to him and goes, man, I need to go to the Chinese massage parlor after this.
Yeah. See, they drop in hints like this is what the next movie is going to be.
Exactly. And this actually came out in 98. Then after that, Rush Hour 2 came out in 2001. So 3 years later.
Jeez, we were on the edge of our seat. Because we were like, oh, come on, Rush Hour 2, hurry up. Like, everybody was so geeked about it. They were like, oh,
Rush Hour 2. This is when people used to take their times writing scripts and stuff and taking their time developing stuff versus how it is now. Whereas, like, we got to rush the production. Not only that, but we have to have a $250 million budget just to make our money back. No, you don't. This was a $30 million budget. If this was today's time, $250 million, easy. And then next thing you know, it doesn't even make that much money at the box office, so therefore it's not even profitable. So you wouldn't even see a Rush Hour 2.
It's hit and miss with the second movies, like in general.
Any type of sequel is what you're saying.
Yeah, because like the second one can be good or bad. And some very rarely the third one is great. But now they have like fourth and fifth ones.
Right. For this one, though, for me, is perfect as far as the budget goes, the pacing of it and stuff like that. And they took their time to build on it. And even though it was 3 years, for them, it was only a day in the movie. But you're right, though. The only movie that I didn't like with Rush Hour was 3. I did not like Part 3.
I do like 2, but I think the villain could have been better.
I don't even remember anything from Part 3. Other than 2. The part where, part 2?
Yeah, the villain could have been better in 2.
All I remember was him falling out the window, and the blooper of that part was like, well, he's not going to be in Rush Hour 3. That's all I remember. I remember the parlor. I remember everything else. I just don't remember the villain.
Rush Hour 3.
I don't remember the villain in Rush Hour 2. But Rush Hour 3, I just remember only certain small parts, and that's it. I don't really remember that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
The villain was kind of like mid for me in Rush Hour 2. Like 3, you have funny scenes in 3, but you know, it kind of, when it got to Paris, it's like, whoa.
And get this, my friend and I still remember this, because $100 says that they're going to fight on top of the Eiffel Tower.
Come on,
that's exactly what happens. Because you can't have an action comedy movie, a buddy cop movie, but especially when you're in another country, not have them fight on top of the Eiffel Tower or any kind of landmark.
Yeah, not to say anything about Paris, but this particular buddy cop movie doesn't work in Paris. Like, it, some reason it works in China and
Hong Kong
and America.
Right.
It's like, Paris.
And they're reaching.
Yeah.
But yeah, even with Rush Hour 2, it made $347.3 million at the box office, at worldwide box office numbers.
Yeah.
So it goes to show you that the first two movies are strong.
Mm-hmm.
And hands down, this is one of my favorite movies to watch if you're just wanting something in the background, just laughing along with stuff like that. This movie still holds up in my opinion. Yeah, you have some stuff that Chris Tucker says that is kind of offensive and stuff, but at the same time though, you can still have that nostalgia feeling to it, to the point where if you grew up with this, you're going to still love it no matter which way you turn.
Yeah.
And so with me, I'm still going to give it an 8. I might actually go up with a 9. Out of this.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I'll do 9. Yeah, that's pretty fair. Yeah.
I still enjoy this. Yeah.
I guess my fear is, you know how now they're coming out with these movies like 20 years later, 30 years later, like Beetlejuice. And you got all these other, it's like you got decades and decades to write a good script. But I know there's other elements that go into that too. Like, what if they mess up Rush Hour 4? Like, it's been decades since Rush Hour 3. And if they come out like Rush Hour 4,
it's very rare.
Excited,
right.
And we're like, oh, we're going to go Rush Hour 4. And it's like, ugh.
Right, because we've seen it before, right? Especially if you look at Beverly Hills Cop, the last Beverly Hills Cop movie and stuff like that, too. So it's hard to do a movie that has some IP to it that came out over 30 years ago and try to rehash what you did and hope that you make a grand slam out of it.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that. It's hard to capture that magic again.
And it's a new culture.
Yeah.
So jokes don't fly like they used to.
No. That's why we grew up hard. That's why we grew up the way we did.
Grew up hard, son. Hard.
Right, exactly. Hard, we had some hard knocks. We had school of hard knocks.
Yeah, son. I'm sorry.
But anyways, guys, that's going to be it as far as our review for Rush Hour. I hope that you guys enjoy this. We'll try and do Rush Hour 2 probably sometime soon as well if you guys enjoy this review. But this coming up Wednesday, Rossi will be back with me, and we're going to be talking about Dexter Original Sin. We're doing the 9th episode in that series. And after that, we'll do the 10th episode, and that'll be wrapping that up for Dexter Original Sin. But next Wednesday, I'll have Beth from the Made for TV Movie Podcast. We're going to be talking about The Outsiders. So that's going to be at 8 o'clock sometime, 9 o'clock Eastern time. Rossi has her gaming channel, her gaming segment coming on at 9 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time as well. And she's going to be talking about the controversy with Naughty Dog. So we're going to talk about, they're going to talk about that.
Nice.
So go ahead, follow us on all social medias. Also too, follow us on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, where you guys get your podcast from as well. Also too, go ahead, visit our Unfiltered Studios family as well. We're part of a studio network. So check out the Sleepy G Show. Check out Hypno Wellness. Also check out, The Beep. If you don't know who The Beep is, that is Finding Your Way podcast. And also check out Pedals of Support. Check out Mama D. So that's everything you need to know here at Movie Loves Unite. And I hope you guys have a great and safe night. Thank you, Tamika, for always joining me for these movie reviews. I really enjoy it.
And donate to the show, because my hair has been through like 500 variations and we need a glamour squad for Tamika. So donate to the show.
I need to make like a Tamika pictures segment, like all the stuff, all the hairdos
that you had. Then my hair like, we need like a glamour squad.
But yeah, donate to us so that way we can actually fix Tamika up and everything so that she can look fly on the, fly on the YouTube channel. You're very welcome.
Yes, thank you.
So don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe button, all that good stuff here at Movie Love Tonight. And always until next time, guys, have a great and safe night, and we are out.